mute themselves so that there's no interference because we're going to be recording, Joel. So wave instead of clapping and then we'll all see it. So I would now like to introduce our feature reader, Joel Robert Ferguson, who is a poet of working class settler origins. His first book, The Lost Cafeteria, was published in 2020 by Signature Editions, and his writing has recently appeared in Confluence Magazine, Event, The Malahat Review, Riddle Fence, Queen's Quarterly, and Yoke. Born and raised in the Nova Scotian village of Bible Hill, Ferguson now lives in Winnipeg, Treaty One territory, with his partner and their three cats. Please welcome Joel.
Thanks, Angeline. I thought I needed to put the bit about the cats into my biography because there's always a chance that one of them might walk past while I'm reading. So I'm just going to get my timer going. And yeah, I'm going to be reading from my book, The Lost Cafeteria, which came out last spring from Signature Editions, which is based in Winnipeg. And I'll get right into it with a short poem called Rucksack Elegy. And it's an elegy to a rucksack. Most things are left out, and what isn't takes on its proper dimensions. Essentials and irreplaceables only. Wool socks, trail mix, letters, love or otherwise, formed into a cube by gravity and canvas and fastened to the torso. A seat while waiting, pillow and highway side underbrush come dark, ready for almost anything. Sturdy too, when tossed from a freight train, slowly pulling into a yard, its fall gauging speed and safety for its owner who waits to follow. Laid over in unknown cities, it stretches sufficiency just that little bit further for the lived road movie, the pastoral painting, a clumsy joke finding its moment. The next poem I'll read is called Shooting Guns with the Europeans. It's set in the Okanagan and on and around a cherry farm. There's a cock-up with the packing house machinery, so a rare day off bisects the cherry harvest. Why don't we shoot some guns? The Europeans follow country boys' pickup in a rattling, rusted-out Astrovan, its body a patchwork of spray can dregs. Here they come. Florence, Greenwich, Heidelberg, Prague. They keep pace with the truck, careening through every turn and switch back on our ascent to the shooting cops, while the mountains of the Okanagan hold their breath and turn a deeper blue. The Europeans park and scatter, dreadlocked, jocular and slap-happy, boxing with the shadows. Just here by a span, a local among come from a ways, generous with his license and his guns, the small trap and box of clay pigeons last heard skittering around the flatbed like a ad hoc bonspiel. Taking the knee to set up the launcher, he rises an adult, extolling gun safety basics as the European sips cider on the tailgate and paw the dirt, eager for gunplay. We try blasting the pigeons down, taking 5 shots each. The best first-timer among us is the only woman. She brings each bird to ground with fitting neophyte gravitas, but European smirks fly like oratory on the last pull that wonkily veers hard left, her barrel tracking it in a sweeping arc, but missing. No one is shocked when they turn into wolves. One moment the Europeans play at war, firing wildly at stumps and road signs, taking videos of each other, little kids pushing every button on the elevator to feel the power of their clumsy fingers over the wide world. Then tails and snouts, crazed yellow eyes, they bolt through the underbrush and up along the ridge. We never find them, just traces. Retirees' lapdogs that disappear from fenced-in yards to turn up on trails, throats ripped out, and the yammer-yelled threats bouncing down from the hills before dawn to mark their presence, walking parallel to us towards a future made for carnivores. In real life, nobody turned into a wolf or a coyote or anything that I know of. So next poem I'm going to read is called Shunpiking. which is, I guess, like American English from colonial times word for the practice of actively making your own roads or paths to go around toll roads or toll bridges. And it doesn't actually have very much to do with the poem directly. So shunpiking. Hottest day of August. I'm on the apartment's roof thinking about what I've been reading. Egon Schiele, Spanish flu, last days of the Habsburgs, 1918, the end of the war, culture, high and low, last words. But mostly just watching the traffic pass below, thinking about how little I want to walk back to the laundromat, when a Jeep guns and swerves through a red at the corner of Windsor and North. Cursing from shotgun, a muscle man half stands in his seat to make a throwing gesture, and yes, something glints an arc through humid air from his hand to an unseen resting place. They roar off down the road, only to return moments later in an oncoming lane, mounting the curb. Excitable tank top boys hop out, scour through the grass outside the Lefty magazine office next door. It's so hot that everything's melting, leaving gaps where I catch glimpses of Vienna through the sweat palaces that look like ornate cakes. Well, below they look, and the one who tossed away his wedding band cries into his phone, asking for her forgiveness. Read a poem about shooting guns. Now I'm going to read a poem about not shooting guns. It's called His White Tails at the Northern Shore. 40-odd years selling vehicles for General Motors around central northern Nova Scotia, down dirt roads that curled into forest hamlets with tiny wooden churches, over Nutby Mountain, the old highway under the Folly Lake Rail Bridge, through the Wentworth Valley, Oxford, Spring Hill, Parsborough, then home through Economy and Masstown on Saturday's last dime of light. At retirement, a plaque-reading platinum dealer, gilt-lipped tumblers, the continent's golden outline on their sides, 65 acres and a cabin for hunts amid the sleepy farms and cottages of the Northumberland. He saw hoofprints and bought. Years of Renos, a satellite dish for weekends with us grandkids, the time until he'd hunt his deer always growing. How he felt about the quad tracks, the spent shell cases on his side of the gate, his was the generation that kept the inside in. But the stands went unfinished. Fences grew in thickets, strands, haphazard. Walking his domain, looking for the soft spots in his defenses, his worn fatigues fit like her brother's hand-me-downs would have if the Spanish flu hadn't. Weekend mornings, we'd join his fog-light rangings at the northern shore, checking locks and fences, walking the path along his boundary stream. Later, before the estate sale, we came to him again in album pages, among sun-bleached, notable absences. He was younger there than we thought possible, with beers and bucks on a score of hoods. His familiar smile betrayed nothing. Hunting with pals till the end, guys he'd sold pickups to, their sons. Never on his land, though, never his whitetails. Never bagged another deer. Bad luck or old age? Perhaps the subconscious deep down unsteady in his hand? We cannot say. I should probably read a bit slower. I'm just zooming through these. Here's a short poem. It's called Rush Hour Bus, spelled O-U-R, and it begins with a quote that's usually attributed to Margaret Thatcher, but I couldn't find anything to really confirm that. But anyway, Rush Hour Bus. A man who, beyond the age of 26, finds himself on a bus can count himself as a failure. Coming, going, excruciating, underfunded, overworked, jerked, stop, stop, start. Thatcher's dead, and I'm here. Ecstasy's a word I've heard. Halitosis Hal and B.O. Barry, Trades immobile in traffic. Pressed Chunderar's to face. The working world botulism, tin-crammed passing, ill-loved mall promenade, shuttered Russian specialty shop, checks cashed, Lion's Manor assisted living, an unsignaled town car, bougie coupe cuts, a sudden incipient we. Wrote that on the 15 a couple of years ago. Winnipeggers here go to a Portage on the West will know that one. Let's see. Maybe next I will read. Okay, this one is called A Directory of Enchanted Trash. And it's dedicated to Riley and Janice, and it's just about the experience of cleaning out a house we'd lived in at all of us, I think, at different times, at, right before the lease turned over and everybody had run away. Anyway, poem, not description. A Directory of Enchanted Trash. So long, safe haven, first home found in young adulthood's approximation, punk house we all outgrew at last coming to rest. 13 years of handing off the lease from friend to friend of friend and so on comes down to this, frantically gutting the house in the final hours before the first of the month, sweating with the signatory in the damn Manitoban heat for a sniff of a damage deposit long after the last subletter skimped on cleaning, split with hamster cage in hand before the absentee landlord at last makes his appearance. Someone always will, for someone must, slap patch wall holes, reset the doors, find a buyer to pick up both fridges for cheap, clean the wall of mirrors in the Doric column put in by the old pianist who lived here before. Empty the shelves and cupboards, drag submerged relics from the black mold basement, form a directory of our enchanted trash and piles on the front lawn. Lay out the mementos of kids running away from evangelizing families, dead towns and instrumental reason. Photos with face tattoos, highways of riding freight, posters for punk bands forgotten by the clouds and streams. Thank you for your hospitality letters with reciprocal invites to look on the coast next fall from 10 years ago. Break up the piano that came with the place with a hatchet full of chutzpah. Just eviscerate the beast. Slow motion blade falls golden in the extended play of back lane prairie sunset. Load the soundboard into a van borrowed from a friend's mom and head towards the city dump, that magic mountain where sloughed off worlds form middens. To the curb with the rest. We lived with it all for as long as we could stand it. Let's see. I think I will read this one. It's sort of a memory poem. If you ever get a chance, it's written in the style of this book called I Remember by an American poet and artist named Joe Brainard, and it just every line starts with I remember this, I remember that. It's about 200 pages long. I'd count it as poetry. It's a really excellent book. I'm rereading it again right now, but this is my attempt to do it. It's a fun writing exercise too. So this is called Walking Backwards after Joe Brainard. I remember heading downtown on the 18, how at Selkirk and Main, my phone shuffled onto some old song, and the early morning light suddenly dazzled me. I remember business-sponsored street art covering up off-sales and pawn shops, like broken-down salarymen forced to wear party hats. I remember photocopies of train schedules, Canadian Pacific crew change locations, vague directions on getting there from the highway. I remember you and me breaking into a falling-down cottage by the lake, that can't say which of us fell asleep first. I remember taking a Sharpie to draw a big Rococo-looking gateway around the window overlooking the tracks, a gesture to endings and false starts, I think. I remember you and me standing sheepish by the train when the engine workers saw us trying to find rideable cards, then the train headed north without us. I remember the butterflies waiting for that next one and having to piss every 5 minutes from nerves. I remember hitchhiking to Sudbury alone. I remember old Spanish loyalists speaking at anarchist book fairs. I remember my first hit of acid and writing gibberish about Heidegger. I remember taking toboggans to Fort Needham Memorial Park with friends whose contact info is now long lost. I remember photos from after garage shows, 20 sweaty teenagers, punks and goths, giving their small town best with impeccable hair. I remember Might As Well Go for a Soda, Nobody Hurts, Nobody Cries by Kim Mitchell, and how being straight edge made one feel above it all. I remember mosh pits, elbows, noses, jets of red, red blood at the Legion, teenhood's broken nose jubilance. I remember that Victoria Park closes at 10 to fill with creeping small town cops trying to nab potheads and cruisers. Mostly, though, I remember overnight trains in my bedroom window as a child, sleeping travelers heading elsewhere in a golden flash of light. I think I have time here for one more. I think this one, I should probably do it just a priori content warning. It's called Something Yet Deserves to Live, and it deals with suicide. So, yeah, I will read it now. Something Yet Deserves to Live. He gauges how far that train that followed his. I'm going to start that again. I kind of messed that up. Something Yet Deserves to Live. He gauges how far the train that followed his dragged the woman along the platform last week with a sweep of his arms, Moses parting the kitchen table's plates and empties. Committee-vetted language upholds the distance a transit worker needs to dodge a breakdown, an incident, an emotionally disturbed person, a faded statistic for him, this his 10th year as an operator. When I talk some bad taste bullshit about it, he's quick to stop me. He did feel compassion for her. What he resents is the eye contact she made with him before a half jump, before some indwelling counterforce pulled her back to safety for a little while longer, like God's own ragdoll. Eye contact like that of miserable thousands he sees every day from the train's cab, identical, in a town where everyone looks down, passing eyes are dared only underground. Our talk branches back village of our births, the land he and his wife planned to buy there. I start clearing the dishes when he goes to check on their daughter, asleep in her crib. Jack Spicer had it wrong. Something deserves to live. And I'll just call it there. Thanks everyone for being a great internet audience. Thank you.